Welcome to the Jazz Piano School Podcast, episode number 327.
Welcome to the Jazz Piano School Podcast.
Learn jazz piano without all the guesswork.
Now, your host, Brendan Lowe.
Welcome to the Jazz Piano School Podcast, where we have one mission, that is to help you achieve jazz piano freedom so that you can express your true inner soul and emotions instead of having to copy what others have shown you. Now, we do this by providing structured and organized jazz piano education on specific jazz piano tools that you can then take and use over any tune so that you have complete jazz piano freedom. Welcome to the Jazz Piano School Podcast, episode number 327. My name is Brendan Lowe, creator and founder of Jazz Piano School. Thank you so much for being here. Super excited about this episode. We're back and rolling with the content. I feel so much better. I'm over being sick. And a couple of exciting things before we jump in. I won't make this introduction too long, but I just want to congratulate Sterling Koza, one of our Jazz Piano School educators, on his recent tour with Benny Banak. A lot of you may know Benny Banak, fantastic trumpet player, vocalist, playing with Emmett Cohen in the New York scene, doing a lot of amazing things, playing with Veronica Swift. And Sterling recently went on tour with him in Japan, had an amazing time, obviously played brilliantly. And so it's great. I mean, it's great to have Sterling on staff and just doing these wonderful things in the music community, playing jazz and just out there. You know, a lot of different educators, whether they're in different types of institutions, just because of their obligations and responsibilities, they don't have the time to go and do that, which is unfortunate. And I know a lot of educators that really, you know, they're sacrificing for education, which is beautiful in its own right, but then they don't get to do the performance aspect of it. So, you know, I think I'm grateful that I get to provide Sterling an outlet for education through Jazz Piano School, and it's online, right? He's involved in the Live Accelerator program, teaching live classes and lessons and doing content, obviously, for Jazz Piano School. But at the same time, he's able to go out and actually, you know, be a working professional jazz musician with the top cats around that are in the New York scene. And, you know, he continues to do more and strive for more. So it's fantastic. And you can go check out Sterling Koza. You know, check out his Instagram. Obviously, go check out Benny Banak, too. A lot of amazing things. There's some amazing tracks and albums with him. I love his everything that he does, actually, is really, really cool. There's a great track with him and Veronica Swift that I absolutely love. I'm forgetting the name right now. But yeah, just wonderful, wonderful music. So definitely go check them out. Sterling is doing the episode today. So isn't that funny enough? So, I mean, you get top quality musicians performing and educating. And I think it's nice because us younger cats, right? I'm not that young, but I'm like not old yet. You know, I'm 39, but we're a different generation. We're a different generation than the older jazz educators. We have a different perspective. Right, we have different types of educational methods. The whole era in which we are raised and were raised is just different, right? So really, you really kind of have to think about that. I mean, you know, our whole perspective on using tech and just being involved in a different era where the internet and all this stuff was, you know, being developed and was taking off. I mean, obviously, like I was in 6th or 7th grade when the internet first came out and AOL was a big part of my life. And, you know, it's just a different thing. So you get a different perspective from education. We've gone through the education with the previous jazz educators, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So like we, Sterling and I and Trent, Bijan, Jazz Piano School, obviously, we've gone through exactly what you have with the older generation educators, and I appreciate everything they've done for the scene. I appreciate everything that they are about, but what I'm trying to say is we have created our own style, our own philosophies on teaching based on our experiences, And if you know my story, if you know what Sterling's gone through, some of what Trent's gone through, and actually all my staff, all my educators, I hired them because we shared similar experiences in the jazz education world. And a lot of that, there's some good times for sure, but a lot of that for me was contains a lot of frustration. It contains a lot of kind of just unstructured education, a lot of wasted time, unfortunately, in my case. And so our philosophies are very aligned, Sterling, myself, Trent, everyone, right, on what we are teaching, how we're moving forward, and what we want to do for you, like how we want to educate you on the current, you know, way of learning jazz and really helping you efficiently learn as much as possible. That's what we're all about. And over and over and over, over and over, I continue to hear the same thing. You know, well, Brendan, I would go to other kind of more famous educators. A lot of people say this because I'm not famous by any means, right? I'm not a famous jazz musician. When you think of a famous jazz musician, you know, you think of whoever, like Emmett Cohen. Emmett Cohen is a famous jazz musician. He's blowing up, right? You think of other famous jazz musicians, whoever you think of comes to mind, right? I'm not a famous jazz musician. So everyone thinks, oh, if I go to these famous jazz musicians, I'm going to learn better, right? I think that's just the thing. If you go to the best player, you're going to be able to be taught the best. Unfortunately, that's not the case, because teaching and playing are two completely different skill sets. Teaching and playing are two completely different skill sets. So being able to break something down into simple, bite-sized, clear, understandable steps is a real talent. Now, I'm not going to toot my own horn, but what I've found is that a lot of students said they went and tried more famous teaching and would always come back to my philosophies, my teaching, because I'm able to really distill it. Now, I truly believe it's because I've walked in your shoes for a long time. I've walked and been in your shoes for a long time, going to these famous musicians, going through this educational path, because I am a younger generation, right? And I've gone through exactly what you've been through. I've lived it. And because of that, I've really just made it my ultimate mission in life, my goal, unfortunately, to not teach in the style that I've encountered 99% of my life, right? Because I did not find it efficient. I'm a man of proficiency and efficiency. I hate wasting time. I like getting things done. I like making progress. I hate having my money wasted. I hate wasting money and I hate wasting time. And so I've completely dedicated myself to delivering the steps and the quality education that's going to help you move forward in a way that's not just like you show up for your lesson and, you know, you shoot the SHIT for 45 minutes and then you get, and then I play for 15 minutes and then that's it. Nothing's written down, nothing's recorded. And then throughout the week, you have no idea what to do. You come back to the lesson, you throw some albums on, you listen to some cats, right? That's another 60, 70 bucks down the drain. Now, I'm not saying all lessons are like this, but I've experienced lessons with teachers that are like that. That's not fun. That's a completely waste of money, in my opinion. Now, not everyone would say that. You know, some would be like, well, just the hang is worth the experience. Like, just hanging out is the experience, what you're paying for. Yeah, I guess. But that's not where I want to invest my money. If I was paying someone to just hang out with them, then I want to know that up. I want to know that up front. It better be like, yo, I don't know, Oscar Peterson or something, rest his soul. But like, if I'm going to pay to hang out with someone, you know, I want it to be like someone from like Michael Jackson. Well, maybe not Michael Jackson, but I don't know, you know, some famous person that I idolize, right? Anyway. I think it's just, I'm just sharing my opinions. That's what this podcast is for. But I appreciate Sterling. I appreciate everything he does. And again, we speak about this. We align with our philosophies and all the teaching methods and styles that we try to produce. And I'm just grateful he's doing these things. He's out there experiencing and able to deliver this quality of education for you. Now, go to jazzpianoschool.com/podcast327 if you want to get the notational exercises for this particular podcast and particular for this modern jazz chord that he's going to teach you. Now, this is a funny thing, and this is the last thing I'll leave you with before we get into this podcast. You know, marketing in the internet is a funny thing because I run a business, right? And I want to help as many people as I can. That's what the business is about. It's about reaching outreach to jazz musicians because I truly believe in the quality of my education, like I've just talked to you guys about. And in order to do that, you know, we fluff things up. But the fluff isn't because the quality of education should not be understated, right? Or underestimated. Because what Sterling's going to teach you right now is a chord. He's going to teach you a modern chord. And you'll be like, a lot of times, okay, this is what I see and observe. A lot of times students are like, that's it. How is this jazz, okay? But you have to look at it with a deeper perspective. These types of things really create, they are the fundamental cornerstones to build everything you're wanting to learn how to do, right? So just because we say the only modern jazz piano chord you'll ever need, you're like, oh yeah, sure. It actually can be true. If you use this as your cornerstone and start to place in building blocks alongside of this and take your playing to the next level by expanding upon this knowledge, everything that comes after this and you build on top of really has come from this one chord. So that's what I'm trying to say. And again, please try to keep an open mind when you're seeing the education, learning the education, because even the simplest nugget, even the simplest chord, the simplest line, the simplest piece of advice has the power to be completely transformative, completely life-altering and changing in your jazz piano performance, right? You can't just look at something and say, oh, that's not it. That's not what I need, you know, right? So please just keep an open mind. That's all I say. That's a tip I'm going to leave you with, right? Because on the surface level, it is just a chord. But if you go below the surface, you dive deeper and you spend time with it and you spend time building a relationship with it and you practice it and you do exactly what Sterling's telling you, you really study it, you understand it, doors are going to open for you. And that's the type of student you need to be. To become great at this music, that's the type of student you need to be. You don't want to be the type of student where you're just like, oh, that's it, and then you move on, okay? Explore, be curious, right? Be resilient, dive deeper. Strive to be hungry for knowledge and take what we give you and expand upon it, right? So with that being said, let's dive right in. Go to jazzpianoschool.com/podcast327 to get the materials for this. Enjoy.
Everybody, Sterling here with another podcast tutorial. Today I'm showing you the only jazz chord that you'll need. And this is a voicing with several different inversions that can be applied in a variety of settings just to really give you that modern sound that you're looking for. This sound is used in compositions by musicians that, you know, we know and love, like Kurt Rosenwinkel, Walter Smith, Ambrose Akimisuri. Not just pianists, you know, all kinds of instrumentalists use this sound. And I'm going to show you today how to get your hands on the keyboard and practice this chord so that you can use it in your voicings, you can use it in your comping, you can use it in your compositions. It applies in a variety of scenarios and just has a really great sound. So let's get into it. The voicing that I used in the key of D minor looks like this. So it's going to have the 3rd, the 11th, also known as the 4th, the 7th, and the 9th. This is what we call a minor 11th chord. Now, we're going to look at some different applications for this voicing later on, but for now, we're going to use the context of a minor sound, so a minor 11 sound. The beauty of this voicing is that it has upper extensions, including both the 9th and the 11th. If we had just a plain root position minor 11th chord, it would look like this. So stacked thirds. Somebody like Bill Evans would play a minor 11th chord with this voicing because it's a little more traditional, and it's got all the chord tones in it. But we're going to substitute this 11th on top and place it in the middle of the voicing, which creates this really nice minor second interval. And to me, this is really the key. The key to this voicing is the minor second interval in the middle and the major 7th between the 9th and the 3rd. That really gives us that crunch. And if we invert that to put the 9th in the middle of the voicing, we get this crunchy minor 2nd interval. So we're going to play with all different combinations of inversions for this voicing, and it's going to give us different sounds each time. So this is the main inversion that I want you to know and to practice. So I'd recommend just taking this all around the circle of fourths. So we start with D minor, G minor, C minor, F minor, B flat minor, E flat minor, A flat minor, D flat, F sharp or G flat, B minor, and be careful when you get down here, it might be too low, so I'd recommend taking it up the octave. If it's down here, it kind of loses the quality, it's a little too muddy. So we'll go B minor up here, E minor, A minor, and then we're back to D. And man, really has a nice quality down here in the lower register. This is probably the lowest I would play this voicing. If you go as far as C, it starts to get a little muddy, so that's up to you. But I would practice taking this voicing all around the circle of fourths. Next, we're going to do another inversion, just like we said. So, D minor 11 with the 9th on top. Let's try it with the 9th on the bottom. Then we have this really beautiful cluster in the middle. E, F, G. That's the 9th, the 3rd, and the 11th. We don't really call it the 10th because the 3rd is the 3rd. But when we get up into the upper extensions, we want to use those higher numbers, the 9th, the 11th, the 13th, right? So we have the 9th, the 3rd, and the 11th with the 7th on top. So before we had the 9th on top, now we have the 9th on the bottom with the 7th on top. So just as before, I'm going to take this through all four, all the circle of fourths. If you want, you can throw on a metronome, do maybe four beats per chord. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3. And then we're back. So there's one more inversion of this voicing I want to show you. We had the 9th on the bottom, we had the 9th on the top. Now we can take that 11th from the middle, and instead of having this major second interval, we can flip it up and create this nice open sounding voicing with the interval of a major 9th in the right hand. So we have root, 3rd, 7th, 9th, 11th. So let's take this through the circle of fourths, and we can start to add a little bit of flavor, you know, with some arpeggios in the voicing too. We can, you know, instead of just playing it, you know, all at once, it can get a little repetitive, a little boring. Let's spice it up a little bit. So we can add, you know, some tempo. 1, 2, 3, 4. Thank you. beautiful sound with that minor 11th chord. It starts to sound kind of like Pat Metheny, you know. So a lot of applications for that chord, you know, it's a really flexible chord. So let's talk about some different ways that we can use this chord. We were just doing it in a cycle of fourths. You could also go backwards in a circle of fourths, which is a cool sound. So that's a cool way to practice the chord too, in the opposite order. This chord tends to sound really well going through different intervals in the bass. So like, you could try doing it in minor thirds, you could try doing it in major thirds. We just did fourths and fifths. There's a particular composition that I know that some of you may be familiar with, and that is Cyclic Episode by Sam Rivers, the great tenor saxophonist. And Walter Smith actually has a great cover of this, if you haven't heard it, on his album Casually Introducing. Shout out to Walter. And Sam Rivers wrote this, you know, in the 1960s. So this chord has been around for a long time, but, you know, he was really the first, I think, to start transposing it in this way. I think there were some earlier musicians, maybe like Woody Shaw, Joe Henderson, started using, you know, minor seventh chords going in minor thirds, but Sam Rivers was, I believe, one of the first to use the minor 11, which I think is a really cool sound. So the tune, if you don't know it, it goes something like this. That's the melody. It's a quick tune, 16 bars. But the beautiful thing is, right off the bat, we have these minor 11th chords going up in minor thirds, starting from B flat. So B flat, D flat, E, G, C. Then we have a dominant chord, G minor, and then a 2-5-1. And there's our friend D minor 11, followed by B minor, A flat, F, and then D. And then there's a couple sort of more chromatic chords before an E minor 11, and then F sharp minor 11, which takes us back to B flat. That's a pretty cool resolution at the end. F sharp minor, B flat minor. Sort of like a tritone substitution of sorts. So a lot of minor 11th chords in this tune. So I would recommend grab a lead sheet of this one and try practicing your minor 11th voicings using the tune Cyclic Episode. So we'll have practice materials for you so that you can practice all three of these inversions that I just showed you around the circle of fourths. And you can use them in your compositions. You can practice improvising over them. And it should really give you more access to this modern sound. So hope you enjoyed this lesson, and leave a like and some comments in the section below if you have any questions or if there's more you'd like to hear about this topic. So thanks for tuning in. I'll see you next time.